Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Consilio Better Places podcast. Today I'm going to be discussing with Carly Vince from Planning Consultant Squad all things related to data centres, how they are treated in the planning system, the addition of them as critical national infrastructure, future growth not just in data centres but also the energy required to power them and much more. Carly, thank you very much for joining us today. Just before we begin, please explain a bit about your background and your role at Quad.
Hello, I have been fortunate to work on some of the most strategically important infrastructure projects in the country, Hinkley, Sizewell, other energy generations, and also data centres.
Fantastic. Well, thank you once again for joining us today, Carly. And I think it's important we actually start with what, on the surface, is probably a simple question, but one that many of us don't actually really know the answer to. What is a data centre and why do we need them?
Absolutely. They're essentially facilities that store infrastructure that enable our IT systems, the likes of servers, data storage, network equipment, and they are essentially storage for companies and also our own digital data. We use them to sell projects, run web applications, and companies use them for everything in terms of distributing information, managing backup, enabling data replication. But actually what's really interesting in the government's latest information around AI is their transformational benefits in terms of healthcare, AI, digital powered health scans, and even education, things like specialised plans for children. So it's really evolving and innovative at the moment.
So they're not just a nice thing to have, but actually as you go forward over the forthcoming years, they're an absolute necessity for everyday life now. Netflix, Instagram, Amazon, online banking, I guess all are dependent upon data centres.
Absolutely.
Well, so given data centres are clearly so important to any country's future economic growth, it's not just surprising to see many governments around the world talking about investments in them at the moment. We can discuss that internationally later, but first let's look at the UK. So there's currently an estimated 514 data centres in the UK. And interestingly, that's estimated because there's no official record you can find because some companies are worried about server farms being exposed to potential attacks. But it's estimated there's 514 data centres. And we are the third ranked country in the world for data centres, which on the surface doesn't sound like we're in a bad position. However, the Labour Party manifesto ahead of the election this year identified that the current planning regime acts as a major brake on economic growth and specified that reform must remove planning barriers to new data centres. So with respect to the previous government, was there a feeling within the industry that data centre delivery was taking too long perhaps, or not given enough attention within the then planning framework?
I think it's right that policy didn't really reflect the strategic importance of the facilities. And a general reflection that things were taking too long, not only for data centres, but planning more generally. So we have been heartened to see government's classification, and I'm sure we'll come onto this in a moment, of them being of critical national importance, and then taking the steps to remove the barriers in the planning regime and regulatory regime more broadly.
Was the major barrier then more about just the time it took rather than how councils were approving them or not, or was it a combination of different factors, do you think, that made the government feel this didn't need some specific action taken?
I think it's all comes down to sort of facts and degree, doesn't it? And I think it was the individual local authorities, but having seen the need reinforced through policy, it will be really beneficial to those local authorities going forward.
And I think you can see that with respect to how the government saw local authorities, because the seriousness with which they approached data centres was made very clear within days of the election, as Angela Rayner, in one of her first acts, recovered two appeals for data centres on previously developed land in the Greenbelt, one in Bucks and one in Hertfordshire. The Bucks one has now subsequently been approved. What message did this decision to call in the application send to the data centre industry about how serious the government was taking this sector?
It's really positive that they have been seen to be on the front foot. One of the sort of first key sectors that they've really sort of started to grapple with. And it's been multifaceted. They have identified them being able to take status as nationally significant infrastructure projects. That was in December to enable that strategic decision making. There's stronger policy support even at the local level through the National Planning Policy Framework, which came out in December. And then this week, or in recent weeks, the AI Opportunities Action Plan and the government's response to that. I mean, it's really interesting that even in the 12th line of that document, it talks around speeding up planning applications, the creation of AI growth areas, and even going so far as to name one of those areas. Mm-hmm. But inevitably, as you say, it does need to then cascade down to the local level to make sure decisions are being made in a timely manner.
So let's touch upon some of these government announcements, which you just mentioned there, Carly. I think the first one came in September last year with the announcement that data centres will be designated as critical national infrastructure. And that's the first new designation since the Space and Defence Centres gained it in 2015. And puts data centres, so people are aware, on equal footing to water, energy and emergency services. Why do you think the government did this? But actually, practically, what does this mean? What would the impact of that be?
I think it clarifies in all of our minds, policymakers, businesses from investment perspective, and also from us as communities in these areas, and also placemakers like planners, communications, that this is front and centre of what we require as kind of UK PLC at this stage. So I think it's really important to sort of frame that in people's minds. And then that also enables that to cascade through to policy and then ultimately decision making. So it is having a really positive impact, and we are seeing that in our planning applications.
Yeah, well, with respect to policy, we then turns us, as all conversations in planning, to the new MPPF, which came out in December and actually mentions data centres twice. In paragraph 86, for those who want to go and look this up, it says planning policy should pay particular regard to facilitating development to meet the needs of a modern economy, including by identifying suitable locations for uses such as labs, gigafactories, data centres, digital infrastructure, freight and logistics. And in paragraph 87, it says planning policy should recognise and address the specific locational requirements of different sectors, and includes making provision for the expansion of industries of local, regional or national importance to support economic growth. So, Carly, if I'm a planning officer at a local authority or council leader faced with a data centre planning application, which is likely something not identified currently in a local plan, what does the MPPF mean for you when you're assessing an application?
So the positive news is at the moment they are classed as B8, so general industrial uses. And so there's many policies within existing documents that essentially recognise where they need to be cited. So we're not sort of needing to start afresh, but clearly it re-emphasizes the need case, and that should be at the forefront of decision makers when taking these decisions. But it's also then important as local authorities start to update their policy framework such that they can then specifically identify them in policy space and make provision, particularly on specific sites. We'll come on to shortly the sort of interactions between energy demand and the data centres. And I think that needs to be better reflected in policy. But I think it doesn't trump all. It's incumbent on all of us to make sure that these sites sit suitably in these locations, that they're appropriately designed and assessed, and that there's really meaningful feedback and engagement with stakeholders so that they are delivered in the right way.
And it's interesting we talk about delivery, because if that wasn't enough data centres, the government released the AI Opportunities Action Plan, which is prepared by Matt Clifford, co-founder of Entrepreneur First, and great job title this on LinkedIn, AI Advisor to the Prime Minister. I mean, there can't be many hotter on LinkedIn at the moment. Now, the action plan is advisory, not policy, but it did contain some really interesting ideas around planning the data centres. It called for the creation within 6 months of a long-term plan for the UK's AI infrastructure need, backed by a 10-year investment commitment. And interestingly, the establishment of AI growth zones. The purpose of these would be to facilitate the accelerated build-out of AI data centres and could introduce a streamlined planning process. Along with this, you also said government should consider other measures to accelerate build-out of data centres, such as offering central guidance and creating a bespoke planning news class. So there's a lot to unpick there, Carly, but let's start with AI growth zones. What could that look like in reality?
In reality, they could be on the existing sites identified for Class B8 uses. They could also be applications of a strategic nature and determined by central government themselves through what we call DCO, Development Consent Order applications. But there's also a real opportunity, I think, in terms of making use of these sort of simplified planning systems through the strategic development orders, local development orders, and the like. So I think there's a real ability for individual developers to think about what regime could I use to deliver best outcomes for this location, rather than be forced into using a single regime.
Is this something which is available at the moment and people aren't utilising maybe the opportunities that current legislation allows for?
That's certainly right. A lot of developers haven't been using that, but we are increasingly getting developers asking us around the merits of those orders, and not just for data centres, but actually more broadly. And so I think it's a real opportunity, and I definitely think there'll be a number of developments coming through that regime in the coming years.
Yeah, and also potentially through a bespoke planning use class, which was the advice which MACTIVA gave, and I must emphasise this is advisory, not policy, the document. Do you think a bespoke planning use class is needed for data centres? Sounds like we've got an awful lot already we could be using.
That's my view. I think obviously anything that supports the sector is beneficial, and this would be another tool in the toolbox. But I think actually there's more significant matters to prioritise around the streamlining of the planning and regulatory regime, ensuring statutory bodies are proportionate, making sure that there aren't a huge number of steps in the process. So even once you get your outline planning, your reserve matters, there's still a requirement to then subsequently get approval for your biodiversity net gain plan. It feels like there's too many steps in the process, and actually that could be more simplified. And similarly, ensuring that the local authorities and the regulators have resource to enable these projects to go through. And then more strategically create a policy framework and a space to enable sort of complementary uses to come forward. I think that would add more value to data centres coming forward than a use class.
I think everyone always says if we just have more planning officers, that would be the same thing. Always talk about reform. If we pay for some more planning officers, we might speed the process up a lot quicker than regulatory reform. But I found it interesting when we talk about reform being needed, because the government also announced this month the UK has attracted an average of £200 million per day in private sector AI investments into Labour took office, £8.3 million an hour, for those who want to work that out. And following the release of the aforementioned MacTiffin Action Plan, it said more than £14 billion in new investment and thousands of jobs have been confirmed. And then just last week, Hartsmere Borough Council granted outline planning consent on a greenbelt site to DC01. I think the names will be in the company. So not always exciting, are they? We always tend to have acronyms like this. For what the developer says will be Europe's largest cloud and AI data centre. I mean, given all of this, how much bigger do you and Quad think the data centre market can become in the UK?
Quad are really lucky to be working on 5 live applications at the moment, and we're getting a lot of interest from not only clients, but also landowners who want to sort of step into this space. I think it's a real growth area for planning, but also a real growth area for our other disciplines, socioeconomics. We know in the action plan, there was a real focus around skills and employment, and for the development economics, really starting to think about how perhaps these large scale brownfield sites could be brought forward for uses perhaps they weren't originally envisaged. And then from an environmental perspective, we know BNG, biodiversity net gain, is a huge issue, as is nutrient neutrality, and really driving proportionate EIA. So yeah, we're confident across the sector.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned swapping of previous consent, because I noticed, I think it's in Bucks, a film studio was going to now apply to become a data centre. So it's clear there are changes coming. But I always feel a big challenge for any large-scale application, and we at Consilio are working on a couple of at the moment. It's proven how local communities can benefit from developments, and you know, sometimes it'd be quite hard to really get across what the benefit to local community of a data centre is. What do you believe that is?
Beyond the construction and operational jobs and the wider investment in the region, is actually bringing back some of these sites that probably wouldn't have come forward for other uses into meaningful use in the near term. I know that some developers are thinking around community benefits and sort of wider investment in the local infrastructure, which can be transformational in some locations, but also the ability to think more strategically in terms of investment. So in the document, and even yesterday or this week, there's been discussions around the sort of Cambridge, Oxford arc.
Yep.
There's a real opportunity to co-locate some of these other complementary uses such that they can have these huge benefits to local communities.
Yeah, that's almost like you're suggesting a strategic approach is taken. So you mentioned some of the benefits there, but I think it's also duty upon us to look at what is considered potentially some of the downside of all these data centres, and the major one being energy consumption. So I looked at the DC01 application. It's planned to have a power reservation of 400 megavolt amperes, which I've probably pronounced wrongly. I do apologise to those who know a bit more. Measure of the electrical power of a data centre could potentially, and I must emphasise potentially, draw. In comparison, it's estimated that a city with a population of several hundred thousand might have a peak capacity comparable to that. I mean, that strikes me as a huge impact on our energy supply. And that's just for one data centre operating at absolute maximum power. Do you think energy supply can keep up with data centres? And how does the planning system deal with this? I'm particularly thinking of Cambridge, where we've been here to do a lot of work, and planning applications have been held up by water shortages. Could we reach a similar point where not enough energy means planning permissions are held up?
It's a really interesting aspect, and I think it is one of the biggest challenges to data centres, but also a real opportunity in terms of, you know, that strategic siting and the sort of complementary uses. And I sort of take the view that the technology is evolving, and even this week we saw DeepSeek advocating the use of 1/10 less power than their sort of rivals. And I think there's a real drive in innovation in this space, but actually in a real need for those markets to compete, to reduce the cost. And actually I'm starting to think about the need for flexibility to be brought into these consents, because some developers are essentially creating the platform or the buildings of which users then can go in. What we need to do is create flexible consents that enable different users with different power needs or different size kit to really go into those sites, rather than needing to continually update and evolve the planning permission.
I fully agree. It feels to me we're at the start of a journey. How do we know in 5 years' time what is going to be required? I'm always remembering the analogy when people, if you ask, would you have invested in Ford when the motor car was invented? No, because there was hundreds of other different companies. You don't know which one is going to succeed, but the car was going to succeed. And it feels like this to me. We know AI is here. We know greater data is going to be needed, but is it going to be more energy efficient or not? You just don't know at this stage. I fully agree. The flexibility has to be there. McKinsey produced a fascinating report that looked at data centres and the accompanying opportunities, looking at predicted growth. So in the US, energy demand for data centres, if they're built out as they currently are, I take your point about modernisation, meaning it's so hard to predict in the future, but equal to 11% of the US power demand. And in the UK, we can reach 4,750 megawatts by 2030. So as well as seeing the data centre opportunities, as a consultancy, Quad, are you seeing the supply chain ramping up to meet this demand?
We're probably more on the periphery of this. I think I'm going to keep my answer short. We know clients are hugely interested in this, and I think local planning authorities are starting to think about how this aligns with their more corporate and social responsibilities, but seeing it lesser in the planning space, if I'm honest.
Right. They identified other investment opportunities. I think it might be worth just looking at these. So the upgrading of high voltage transmission lines or building new ones, substation upgrades, strengthening local distribution networks, facilitating the connection of renewable energy sources such as wind and solar power to the grid, and also battery storage systems to store excess energy. And interestingly, we at Considio are hosting an event next week with the Mayor of Cambridge of Peterborough and Chief Executive Hunter Council, looking at battery storage and how the Eastern region could be at the forefront of international investment for that. And also in America last week, the Stargate project was announced, $500 billion, just pocket change, that will be built in Texas. It could be powered by battery and solar, but also perhaps a bespoke liquid natural gas plant, which do you think with the planning system is ready to meet not just the growth in data centres, but also the seemingly enormous amount of projects that are going to require planning permission to keep up with the demand of the data centres?
I think the planning regime is able to cope. Mm-hmm. We've talked earlier about the resources, which is an important one at local authorities, but also the behaviours of the statutory bodies to really, you know, roll their sleeves up and shape these. There is a critical need We don't need people on the sidelines yeah. making it difficult. We need people to help shape and get the best outcomes. And we do need to actively work with communities. And maybe you'll speak more, more eloquently about this, but there needs to be a shift in mindset. I think we need this infrastructure. There's been a lack of investment in all areas, energy, digital, our grid connections, our gas connections for generations. And we are at a critical moment, and this they do need to come forward. So I think it's multifaceted. I'm confident that the planning system can stand up to it.
It is interesting, because I noticed the new government are using almost the same language as the old government when it comes to blockers. So it is fascinating that recently to see that this has been identified as well, Rachel Reeves and the comments about back tunnels, and that's very much removing the blockers from the system. But finally, Carlo, I'd like to take you back to the start and your previous career and discuss one possible answer to the power demand, which is nuclear energy, which we don't talk about much in this country. But in America, Google has signed a 500 megawatt deal with a startup company looking at nuclear called Chaos, and Microsoft is restarting one of the shuttered reactors at Three Mile Island to power its data centres. Do you think in the UK nuclear has a role to play in meeting the energy needs of data centres? And maybe just more broadly as we move forward in or other energy systems?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge advocate of nuclear. I recognise that we need a mix of energy, but nuclear provides sustainability benefits. It provides a base load, which is crucially important for data centres, but also other uses, as you say. We know that the government and also developers are looking at small modular reactors, which I think could then really start to complement the data centres, not only in terms of powering them initially, but also the potential for backup. We know that there's a real issue, particularly short term, with the grid, and there's opportunities, I think, through sort of private wire potentially. That's a sort of more investment aspect, but I think there's a real opportunity for data centres to collaborate with the energy sector. And as you say, you know, nuclear, well, I think nuclear is a huge part of that, but as you allude to, there's other innovative energy solutions that could really help drive the data centre sector.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this small nuclear option, because it's hard to visualise that in a literal sense. But also, yeah, it's taken an age for us to get anywhere with nuclear. Sizewell, Hinkley. Do you think the British public and politicians and regulators are explaining the true opportunities of nuclear? I expect some of these pro-nuclear others would have a different view, but we just don't hear the words nuclear power, and we're just seeing them as big projects that we can't fund. But actually, look abroad, that's not the case, is it? We recently missing the trick here.
It's so multifaceted. Yeah. I think as a planner who's on Hinkley and Sizewell, it's very easy to blame the planning system. Ultimately, the finance is a significant challenge to deliver the design level of maturity that's needed to go into these to make sure that they are safe and designed in the right way. There's a real opportunity for particularly small modular reactors to complement data centres. And we know that there are constraints, particularly short term, with the grid connection. So there are opportunities through private wires potentially to ensure that sort of ecosystem of uses. And I think there's a lot of room for collaboration in this space, and it's a really exciting time to be part of the infrastructure sector.
Do you feel Britain's ready for nuclear? You obviously worked on Hinkley and Sizewell, which still, I mean, your fault, but you had to work considerable delays. And you just don't hear nuclear talked about as a potential option. We always hear about solar farms and offshore wind. Nuclear isn't really on the discussion table, it seems. But why is that? Do you think we're ready for nuclear?
So government have committed to a significant proportion of energy coming from nuclear. It's a central plank in their policy, and it's required for base load. I'm a huge advocate of solar and wind, but sometimes the sun doesn't shine.
Indeed,
sometimes it's not very windy.
Well, looking out the window here today, I think we can see that the sun is not shining in London.
Exactly. So it is absolutely required. They just are very difficult to bring forward, both from a planning perspective, but also from an investment and also a technology. So I think we will see nuclear come onto the table in the next couple of years, and the planning system I am confident is able to bring those forward successfully.
I think it's more of a narrative around nuclear is actually clean, because people are worried we all know the perception that could be about nuclear, but actually it's one of the easiest ways to get clean energy into our system, recognising the regulatory and financial challenges that there might be. And obviously, if you do want to navigate the planning process, then it's clear from this conversation that Carly and Quad are one of, if not the preeminent advisors in this field. And well, as you'd expect them to say, Consilio is always willing to help with any community engagement requirements for your energy projects. Carly, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to the latest edition of Consilio's Better Places podcast. Upcoming guests include Deputy Mayor Jules Pipe, Sarah Carey, Head of Development at Imperial, and Councillor Jeff Barraclough from Westminster City Council, as well as a host of others. If you want to make sure you don't miss out on the latest episode, please subscribe on our website or whatever podcast tool you listen to. Thank you.